and a very pleasant good morning to you. Once again, it's live from Olympia with 7th Legislative District State Senator Shelley Short and Representative Andrew Engel and Hunter A. Bell on Okanagan Country Radio. I'm your host, Tracy Ellis, with the Washington State Senate Republican Caucus. You can email me with your questions. That email address is Tracy, T-R-A-C-Y, dot Ellis, E-L-L-I-S, at ledge.wa.gov. That's leg.wa.gov. One more time, tracy.ellis@ledge.wa.gov, or call 509-826-0100. And starting on a sad note today, former House Speaker Frank Chop passed away over the weekend. And Senator Shore, I know you wanted to say a few words.
Well, I did. I served with Frank Chop when I was in the House for all of the time I was there in the House. And the reason I want to bring him up today, he had a hand, you know, he represented a very deep in the heart of Seattle district, but he had a heart for rural. And he always gave space for it, even in the midst of the debates when we were in opposition. And for folks that are, you know, in OMAC, enjoy, you know, the OMAC stampede, he was a very integral part of fixing the stampede grounds, getting those bleachers, which was a tremendously large project at the time. He also helped me, you know, maintain Group B water systems at a time when, when the current Secretary of Health wanted to push everything to Group A, which would have hurt home ownership. And he did that. He supported that bill in the midst of half of his caucus not wanting that bill to come up. And I just think it's really important to know that even in the midst of our differences, that he helped us make a difference for our district, along with Jim Rowland, who I give a shout out to, Jim and Cheryl, and all of the folks that helped make that a reality. But I just wanted to say that we certainly are missing him.
Well, this was a big week. The Senate Democrats released their tax package, $17 billion in new taxes being proposed from Senate Democrats. There's most people think about a $7 billion budget shortfall and $17 billion in new revenue in the form of new taxes. I guess, you know, it was a lot to digest. Why don't we maybe just start to take a look at this, maybe pick it apart a little bit, Senator Short. I mean, there are a lot of proposals here. Did anything jump out of that package particularly that is particularly bad to you?
Oh, 100%, the property tax bill. And the reason we've been under a 1% lid limit on property tax increases, this bill does away with the lid altogether. And just let that sink in, folks. You know, that generally there have been bills in the past that have increased it to 3% with a council manic. That's without a vote of the people. Tax increase, this completely removes the lid. If we were to look at where population growth was on average, that's not including the district, but statewide, and including inflation, that property tax growth rate could have been 4.5%. This is at a... The Democrats like to pretend, and I do use that word, pretend to be for working class families, pretend to be for those that are really struggling. And yet this is the bill that jumps out at me, that whether you're a homeowner or a renter, you will pay that. You will pay that difference. It is stunning to me that we're going that direction. And again, it wouldn't just be increasing local property taxes, those junior taxing districts. It would include state taxes as well, which is used to fund education. Look, folks, you know, we've shown and put together a legitimate budget with legitimate numbers, and we were able to show that with some prudent spending and priorities, really those fundamental priorities of government, education, the vulnerable, really holding state government's feet to the fire, that we could do it without raising taxes. This is absolutely 100% not necessary.
Well, and one thing that really struck me about this budget as well was just how tone deaf it was in my mind, coming how after we had just discussed extensively the housing crisis we have here in the state. And the Democrats want to increase, apparently, property taxes significantly. Talk about something else that's going to make it more difficult for people to get into homes. So that was one thing that really struck me about this.
I will say that we did get a sneak peek of what the House may be proposing as well, the House Democrats. Some bills were dropped last week. It looks like, from what I understand, is that they are also looking at a property tax increase, although not the same thing that the Senate Democrats. Senate Democrats basically are proposing a property tax, the ability to raise the property tax rate by, essentially like Senator Short said, by population growth and inflation. It looks like the House Democrats would cap it at 3%. Still, it's a tripling. Right now, it's capped at 1%. And, I'm not sure if every municipality will go ahead and raise taxes as much as they possibly can. I mean, there are certainly some local governments that may not do that. But, boy, like you said, even if it's just a 3%, increase. That's significant, isn't it?
Well, and the nature of government is to grow. I mean, that's one of the things that's so valuable about this 1% cap is that it restrains the growth of government. This has been the goal from the Democrats for some time, to get rid of that 1% cap, and they're going for it now.
People are in a world of trust crisis. People aren't trusting the government with largely good reasons. And I'd say this is something we've heard a lot about. Probably this property tax growth rate is one of the top issues that I've heard about. People just have this great concern because property taxes have already climbed so much, but they just really can't afford to pay much more.
Well, go ahead, Susan.
Well, just to add to how much, we talk a lot and try to increase, first-time home buyers. And wouldn't that be just an oxymoron, but to have folks like that lose their homes due to not being able to afford the property taxes? But I'd like to take it a step further than that. Local governments are a constitutional arm of the state. And if we look at, it is really easy for the state, majority Democrats, to, add regulations, add mandates onto our local governments. Well, isn't that just a slick way to say, well, the state's not going to pay for it, the local governments are going to have to step up and pay for it? And we see that especially in the areas of indigent defense and some of those things where, like, the state only reimburses counties like 5%. It's some ridiculously low number. And so, folks, really that 1% has been a backstop for the state as well. And without that in place, if this bill is to pass, and I would, I am 100% in opposition. We will fight against that. But there's no backstop. The state will continue to pass mandates that they will expect the local governments to do. And look, we know that, our public schools are, are challenged. They have seen market increases. Our budget would increase the maintenance, supply, operation costs, the MSOC, increase funding for special ed and things, but there's just no backstop on any of this.
I'm looking at these House proposals too. Another one would raise the K-12 local levy cap by around $500 per student. That's another potential property tax increase, right? I mean, that's the thing. People sometimes, in schools, kind of take the brunt of this sometimes because that's the biggest property tax, you get your property tax bill, you look at it, it's like, wow, they get a lot of money. Now, there's a reason for that. It's not supposed to be this way, but a lot of the important things that schools do are funded by maintenance levy dollars. But, I'll tell you what. I mean, you think this will, there'll be a backlash against schools, and you'll start seeing levies not pass and bonds not pass because of this?
Well, I think we've already seen that to some degree with, for various reasons, the politicization of schools. We've seen it harder for schools to pass bonds, particularly. I know that I don't know when the last time a bond passed in the 7th District, but it's challenging, and levies struggle also because when trust is low, the people vote with their they vote differently. And it's not that they don't like kids. It's just that they, if they don't trust the outcome or the way that the OSPI is going, then they make decisions that that are unfortunately sometimes come back against the kids.
Yeah, we talked about this during the debate on the Democrats' bill to gut the Parents' Bill of Rights. What I'm seeing is a pretty concerning dynamic change where folks and individuals who went to public schools like me, who you know love public schools, want them to succeed, have really deep concerns about the state of our current public schools and where they're going, particularly with a lot of the edicts that come out of Olympia. And increasingly, you know, parents are making the choice to homeschool their kids and to send their kids to private school. And in many cases, that's the absolute best decision they can make for their kids. And so I think that's a concern when we look at the state of our public schools.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that one of the, I guess that's the argument for local control, right? Because if the locals who are elected by, you know, the citizens of those communities, or the school board members, people who run those schools, if they're mandated to do certain things, if the state mandates that, then, you know, it's hard for a school district to reflect the values of the community, right? And the same thing's true for Seattle, right? I mean, you know, they have different values, maybe in parts of Seattle, and their schools maybe should be run in a different way, you know, the way they see fit. You know, for both the urban and rural areas, isn't that almost an argument for local control?
Well, I think it certainly is. I mean, to your point, I think a school in Inchleam or Republic or OMAC is going to be run different and look different than a school in Seattle or, you know, Bellevue or Kirkland. And I think that should be a good thing. I think what we are increasingly seeing, from my perspective, is a lack of tolerance for local control. They don't want schools out in rural areas to look and act differently, and I think that's a real problem.
Well, there's a reason we have 294 school districts in the state of Washington. I think to Hunter's point, and we have a less than affectionate term for the Democrats, and that's the state school board in the sky, because what they're doing, and we've seen with bills, is it's increasingly usurping and coming over the top of local elected school boards and really the communities. We have a bill this session, it's Senate Bill 5179, unfortunately it's still alive, which would allow OSPI to withhold funding when OSPI does not think, quote unquote, the school boards are enacting the state laws in a correct, and I might say, in the same manner. That's the reason we've had school districts is, you know, there's flexibility in how laws are implemented. It doesn't mean the laws aren't implemented. It means the school districts can do it in a way that best fits their communities. And that, folks, that voice is being taken away.
One of my jobs here is to translate when legislators speak in language you may not understand. For everybody, OSPI is the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction. So the Superintendent of Public Instruction's office basically is what Senator Short's referring to.
Sorry about that. we do get stuck here.
we hear a lot about, you know, the education department at the federal level. It's essentially our state education department, right? I mean, and I would imagine there are some people who have the same, wouldn't mind if it saw the same fate as the federal one. Because, you know, again, you know, I think overall, the schools were set up to be run at the local level.
I might just add one point, and thank you for making sure that we're not just in the Olympia bubble. The state Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction, its constitutional mandate was actually just to make sure that they were kind of an audit oversight, if you will, of the financial aspects of the school district, not the curriculum, not the policies of the school district. And unfortunately, they have become more of the latter than the former. And I had a bill a couple of years ago in the middle of COVID when that department started harassing school districts for not complying with a mask mandate and things like that. I had a bill to actually take away a portion of his authority and give it back to the local school boards. Of course, that bill didn't make it very far at all. But the point was, like, look, let's keep the position for the financial audit oversight. That absolutely makes sense. But let's get rid of the rest.
Back to this Senate tax proposal, Senate Democrat tax proposal. By the way, Senator Schertz mentioned the Republican budget, the Senate Republican budget several times. That's savewa.org, savewa.org, to check out the Save Washington budget. And you'll notice that it's a budget that funds everything and doesn't raise taxes. So it is possible. There are no games being played. It's pretty straightforward. The budget lead for Senate Republicans is a pretty straightforward guy. And what you see is what you get. So the Democrats, one of the taxes that a lot of people are worried about, along with the increase in the property taxes, the employer payroll tax, which will affect a lot of the businesses that have made the state successful. I mean, the Amazons, the Microsofts, that sort of thing. It basically adds a tax, a big, I think it's like a 5% tax on employers who have employees who make over $175,000 a year. I know that to people in this district, that seems like a lot of money, but in Seattle, it's a different thing. It could force these businesses to leave the state, couldn't it?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah,
100%.
This to me looks like another effort by the Democrats to kill the goose that lays the golden eggs, particularly in the Puget Sound area.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's true we don't have a lot of these types of businesses in the 7th, but the prosperity of these businesses, you know, just across the mountains does impact our district. You know, we have a lot of folks who come over for recreation purposes or, you know, any number of different reasons. And so it just to me seems tone deaf. And, you know, another, you know, bad proposal from our Senate Democrats.
It reminds me of a month or so ago that Boeing had a reception here in Olympia, and I stopped by, and one of the Boeing executives asked me, so what's your interest in Boeing? And I said, well, we don't really have a lot of Boeing connection in our district, but I said, I just know that when companies like Boeing that have really made Washington affluent, and it trickles down and it helps us over in our district as well. So, and I said, it's also people in my district tend to know what's right and what's wrong and morals and about how you treat people well. And we shouldn't have given Boeing special tax breaks either, but we also need to treat them fairly and as well as these other companies. And they appreciated that, me saying that. But I do think that these big companies in the Puget Sound region have really been a blessing to the whole state.
And I think there's a counterpart to this also. Every once in a while we talk with, you know, West Side Democrats who do understand that the agricultural piece of the eastern side of the state is essential to the state's prosperity, right?
Well,
I mean, again, Amazon, Boeing don't have a big footprint in the 7th District, but we recognize that they are important parts of the prosperity of our state. And so that's something I know we're trying to think about as we look at this Senate, you know, budget proposal.
I suppose it'd be kind of hypocritical if you were to say, hey, they don't care about our stuff if you didn't care about their stuff, right?
Yeah, that road goes both ways. Right. 90 goes both ways.
Yeah, you don't hear, that is interesting, because you don't hear from rural and east side legislators much that, oh, you don't, hear them disparage really, you know, the west side of the state. I'm not saying you hear that all the time from Democrats on the west side, but, you know, it just seems like there's a different perspective, maybe.
Well, from my sense, it's hit and miss. As I said, every once in a while you talk to, you know, fairly liberal west side Democrats, but they still understand that the health and the prosperity and the success of the eastern side of the state, particularly the ag piece, is really important to the overall success of the state. And from my perspective, granted, I haven't been here that long, but there are others who just don't get it.
Mm.
They don't understand it. Kind of wish we weren't out there.
Well, in my experience is that most people don't disparage what they understand and care about.
Yeah.
And so if I'm having a conversation with a Democrat, very rarely will they disparage anything that I'm talking about. Right? Because when someone understands something, then they tend to get some respect for it. And I think the challenge is that probably most of us in eastern Washington have some friend or family member who lives on the west side and works for Boeing or Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And so that gives us some sort of a connection there. And there's less people over here in the Puget Sound region who have families who are farmers in eastern Washington.
Right. Senator Schor, I mean, you started this show off by talking about representative job, you know, and how he helped the rural areas. So I guess it kind of brings it back to that, right?
Well, it really does. These tax proposals, the thing they can do when, I think whether you're a company or an individual who's very wealthy, it's not hard to take those dollars elsewhere. And the challenge with what you're left with is the people who really can't pay. You know, and the less fortunate, those that don't have the ability to jump to another state because maybe it's a better regulatory climate or it's a better financial climate. You know, those are the folks that the Democrats say they want to help. But yet they're regressive taxes, and they are tremendously regressive. They talk about the sales tax being regressive, but their proposals are going to ultimately hurt those who can least afford it, because the people who can are going to move elsewhere, and we've already seen that.
Yeah, that brings us to the wealth. Oh, go ahead.
One other piece on Boeing, and I think this is an important piece, is that as our economy continues this transition further into the 21st century, where, you know, it's all kind of coding and stuff in the sky and that sort of thing, it's important to remember Boeing builds things,
yeah.
Right? And has employees with specific skills that are really, really important, and we want to keep them here in Washington.
The one tax we haven't touched on from Democrats, again, something that not a lot of people in the 7th District are going to pay is the wealth tax. But, you know, Senator Braun, the Senate Republican leader, calls it a tax on, what was the word he used? Basically, it's a tax on success. So if you come in, you build a successful company, you know, all of a sudden, it's almost like you're being punished for doing it, right? Would that be an accurate way to describe the wealth tax?
I think it is. I think it sends a message to our kids that if they get successful, they'll get punched for it. And it kind of leads into the demonization of success. But also, going back to what Representative Abel said about these people can leave.
Right.
I think that I have less concerns about the short-term financial impacts. What I see commonly here at Olympia, it looks like short-term planning. It's, we can get some of this money today without thinking about how will it impact what people do in Washington State in the future. If these people leave the state to avoid paying taxes, how will our state lose? And will we lose more than we gained financially, aside from the moral aspect of fairness and taxation, which is a whole other point? But
yeah, you know, this is an additional part of the proposal that really bothers me, because it seems like a tremendous disincentive to go out and engage in an entrepreneurial type activity. And that's something that I think we want to encourage, not discourage. You know, we want people to go out there and start small businesses. Small businesses are the backbone of our economy. We know that they generate, you know, tremendous income for the local economies. They, you know, result in hiring of additional jobs and positions. And so I think we want to, you know, absolutely reward that rather than have it have our budget serve as a disincentive for that.
I think Senator Braun calls it a tax on innovation, which is kind of interesting to look at it. So a lot to unpack there with the Senate Democrat tax package. Budgets are coming out this week, and while the part that includes more taxes is the part that kind of gains attention. We'll learn more about where they're going to spend all this money that they're collecting later on in the week. We're going to take a quick break. We will be back here in just a couple of minutes on Live from Olympia. If you'd like to email us to ask a question, we encourage you to do that. Just email me directly. It's tracy.ellis@ledge.wa.gov, tracy.ellis@leg.wa.gov, or call 509-826-0100, 509-826-0100, live from Olympia with 7th Legislative District State Senator Shelley Short and Representatives Andrew Engel and Hunter A. Bell on Okanagan Country Radio. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Martha Stewart. Every year, more than 4 million pets enter shelters here in the United States.
Many of these animals are rescued from desolate conditions. My friends at American Humane have been helping animals for more than 140 years. They help ensure that pets have a safe, warm shelter during times of need, especially during natural disasters. But pets need forever homes too. Adopting a shelter pet enriches the lives of one's family and allows shelters to help more animals awaiting care. Consider adopting today and take some time to learn more about American Humane's other work, including their efforts to rescue animals in need, certify the humane treatment of farm animals, help ensure the safety of animals on the silver screen, and protect our planet's amazing endangered species at AmericanHumane.org.
Hey, wouldn't it be great if life came with a remote control? You know, you could hit pause when you needed to, or hit rewind. Like that time you knocked down that wasp's nest.
Uh-oh.
Or that time you forgot to roll up your windows in the car wash.
Fantastic.
Yeah, a remote control would have come in handy then. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome. But prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes like managing your weight, getting active, stopping smoking, and eating healthier, you can stop prediabetes before it leads to type 2 diabetes. It's easy to learn your risk. Take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Life doesn't come with a remote control. So you're on your own with the wasps. You have the power to take control of prediabetes. Visit doihaveprediabetes.org today. That's doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Many postmenopausal women like me have osteoporosis. There is no cure, but simple changes in our lives can keep us on the path to healthier bones. Osteoporosis can weaken your bones and slowly rob you of your independence. A daily exercise routine, along with a diet rich in calcium and vitamin D, can make a huge difference in your bone health. Taking care of your bones is necessary for healthy aging and lifelong independence. Learn how to start your own path to good bone health. Get bone health tips at pathtogoodbonehealth.org.
Welcome back to Live from Olympia. I'm Tracy Ellis with the Senate Republican Caucus, and we are with the 7th District Legislators. Got all three of them. We do it every Monday. It's State Senator Shelley Short and Representatives Andrew Engel and Hunter A. Bell. And if you have any questions, we encourage you to ask those at, just by going to my email, tracy.ellis@leg.wa.gov, tracy.ellis@leg.wa.gov, or call 509-826-0100, 509-826-0100. And we started the show talking about the passing of former House Speaker Frank Chop. Former Secretary of State Ralph Monroe also passed this week. Senator Short took a moment to call for a moment of silence on the Senate floor when that news came down. Really sad. I mean, Ralph Monroe is the kind of guy they name buildings after. They name, you know, he is just a beloved statesman in Washington State, isn't he?
He is. He is. I mean, he served as Secretary of State for 20 years, but it's just as important what he continued to do after his state service was just, he loved talking about special places in the state of Washington and just really continued to connect all of us to the state that we love. I think in his later years, you know, he was such a fan. He did a lot of work. We always have, you know, honorable times where we honor our branches of military. And so for him, it was the Navy. We always had Navy Appreciation Day, and he was always the one to organize that. And I just think it typifies, you know, how he was as an individual and the care that he continued to show, both in service and out of service, and we are certainly going to miss him.
I was really struck by a number of the accounts of his life and kind of the full circle that represented. One of the accounts I read said that his first job was as a supply clerk in the legislative building. And so, again, going from there to Secretary of State for our state, pretty impressive journey.
Right. Ralph Monroe was a Republican, but there are some people who are almost like apolitical. When you think of Ralph Monroe, you don't really think of him as partisan at all, obviously, but he's a person with a lot of influence on a lot of people in this state, will be missed. And actually, there was a memorial over the week. Every year, the legislature does a joint memorial for people who passed away, and this was the first one for both of you gentlemen, Representative Engel and Representative Abell. What were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so this was institutionally an important week for the legislature. We had the joint memorial for the legislators who passed on, as well as the governor's prayer breakfast that we'll might talk about here in a moment. But it was a beautiful service. It was in the Senate chamber, and what they did was they had current serving legislators carry a candle for our legislators who passed away, former legislators who passed away in the course of the last year. A number of the current legislators knew individuals who had passed away. I did not. There was no one from the 7th, and there were no legislators who I knew, but there were a couple of legislators who had passed away that still needed people to honor them. And so I reached out to the clerk's office and said, I'd be happy to do it. Can I take somebody as different from me as possible? And so, ideally, Democrat, West Side, female. They said Representative Carolyn Powers from Kitsap County served a single term back in the 90s. And what was really interesting was the more I kind of dug into her, despite the superficial differences, kind of similar, actually. Navy family, really just loved her community. She served a single term in the legislature and then went on to serve a couple of decades on the Port Orchard City Council. So she wasn't done yet, really beloved by the community there. So got a chance to light a candle for her and honor her. And that was really meaningful for all of us who were able to participate.
Yeah, I found it meaningful to watch and participate in a little bit and to read the little biographies of the people who'd passed away as the candles went down the aisle. And then I think, Speaker Jenkins made a comment that all of you sitting here will one day be honored in this way when you pass away, mm-hmm. which I think kind of caused me to contemplate the life passes on, right? And thinking about that was meaningful, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I thought it was beautiful. They had, bagpipes with Amazing Grace performed on the bagpipes. So that was, almost wrecked me. And I know I wasn't the only one.
You mentioned the governor's prayer breakfast. You attended that as well?
Yeah, that was a great event. And, it was a packed house. It was actually very difficult to get around if you tried to leave your seat, which is a good problem to have at a prayer breakfast. And some good, really solid speakers. And I think it was meaningful when Governor Ferguson spoke. He, some people know and some people don't, that he's a relatively devout Catholic. And he stated that he has given thousands of speeches in his life. But this would be the first time he's ever talked about his faith. And he said he'd had a kid in the office last week and asked if he ever gets nervous. And he said, no. He said, but I'm a little nervous now. And, he kind of opened up. And I think that was meaningful and bonding.
We also had a keynote speaker there at the governor's prayer breakfast, a daughter of one of our sitting state legislators who spoke really beautifully and meaningfully about a difficult childhood. She was an adopted daughter of this legislator, really in some of the most difficult situations we can have, here in our society, and how life is so much better being part of a loving, protective family and her faith walk. It was really incredibly beautiful. She stole the show from the governor. Yeah.
Maybe we don't talk enough about these types of things that happen during the legislative session. It's just kind of moving hearing you all talk about these things. And, because it does get so, sometimes you just get entrenched and you're just, it's almost like warfare, right? It's battling. So it's nice to have these stories as well. Also nice to have the stories of the pages. The Senate page program is a really cool thing. These teenagers come over to Olympia from their districts to serve as pages here. And you had some pages come this last week.
We did. So Marsha Michaels from Colville brought a number of pages from her co-op over here to Olympia. And they were just wonderful. They did so well. They really took to it like ducks to water. You know, the those who don't know, the page program is a week-long opportunity for high school students to come over to Olympia, be exposed to the legislative process, and really be part of the daily workings of the legislature. They did wonderful work. We got a chance to talk with them a little bit, get some pictures taken, and hopefully plant some seeds there in their minds and their hearts about potential future public service, because it seems like a lot of times the Washington D.C. gets the news, but we're trying to remind the pages, hey, don't forget about Olympia. It's right. Like a really significant difference.
It's important to hear from their perspective. You know, they are going to be future leaders. To hear their questions and their inquisitiveness, their zeal for learning. I had three pages last week who are from the same program, and it just really gives you pause. I mean, that whether, you know, regardless of the age of your constituents, you know, it's just important to get that perspective and to hear what's top on their mind. And that, you know, sadly, really, you know, kids are concerned about what their future is going to look like. And I think that hit me really hard, that we're in kind of a state of chaos, if you will. And, you know, kids are wondering, you know, are there going to be jobs? I had one of my pages, she's looking for part-time work and really nervous about, she wants to stay in her community, but nervous about whether or not there'll be jobs for her. And, you know, to make her way to start getting job experience. And those things land really hard with the decisions that we're making here today.
Well, I'll jump in here too. That, you know, it was a lot of fun having these pages. This is my first page. Maybe it'll be my only page. It's hard to recruit people to drive 400 miles over here for the week. But this whole group of six, I believe they all came from my church, and so a couple of the nights they got together with my family and my boys, particularly, are in that same age group, and so it was fun for them to see people from home, which they haven't really seen since we've been here. So it was a lot of fun having them here and the life. And I think three of them are doing a little project on wolves, so I got to talk to them about my wolf bill, and it's a lot of fun.
There was a neat moment. I don't think it was specifically our pages, but Senator Short, Representative Engel, and I were in the corner office the other day in Senator Short's office, and there was a downpour coming outside, and we saw a group of pages coming over. It was three female pages and one male page, and the male pages being a gentleman. He was holding the umbrella for the other three. He was taking the rain right on the head there. I'm like, his parents have raised him right. He's doing well here in Olympia. They should be proud.
I went down to the venue. We share our building, say Republican building, their new house building, and we share this building with the Page program. And I could tell the other day they discovered where the energy drinks were, because they went down there and they're all gone.
I think it's actually worth noting, since, you know, slight change of topic here, but you mentioned the Herb Newhouse building. It reminded me that Representative Newhouse, who of course represents Okanagan County in Congress, was in town last week, and I know Senator Short and I got to spend a little time with him and hear about what he's doing in Washington, D.C. and there's a lot going on there, but I don't need to comment on that, but it was good to connect with him anyway.
And just to clarify, I think this building's named after his father.
Yeah,
that
correct.
He served
in
the legislature back in a long time ago, so a neat kind of political, you know, family tree there. Yes.
Yeah, he and his family were here when the building was dedicated, and it was pretty moving, actually. It means a lot to them to have this building named after their father, doesn't it, Senator Short? I mean, it was significant.
Oh, absolutely. And just for folks back home, too, you know, people who are honored with those kinds of things, having a building named after them, have generally given significance above and beyond. And, you know, for Dan's father, it was just his work to really bring people together to reach across the aisle. It wasn't, you know, it was something about we have problems we need to solve. And he was just such a good listener, and just really how he conducted himself in just an extraordinary way. You know, I think, you know, our honor here, you know, it isn't about us. It's about folks back home and our constituents and how we can help empower their voices. But there are people who rise above that even again, and Dan's dad was certainly one of those.
Speaking of your constituents back home, you do want to hear from them. It's difficult sometimes during the session, but we have an opportunity coming up. The four of us will be hosting a telephone town hall. It's your opportunity to ask questions directly to your legislators. You can do it here on this program too, by the way, and I'll give you that information in just a moment. But this town hall, it's a conversation really with members of the community.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So Thursday evening at 6 p.m., and I'm going to give the number here, and I might repeat it, but it's 509-361-1818. So again, Thursday at 6 p.m., dial 509-361-1818 and participate in a phone call with myself and Senator Short and Representative Engel. And, you know, again, freshman term here, I don't really know how this works, but I am told that kind of from, you know, going back into the mists of time, we've done this, telephone town hall roughly halfway through the session as a way to reach the majority of our district. Just given how large the district is, telephone seems to be really the best medium for us to engage with the maximum number of people. So really looking forward to it. Hope people can dial in and join us.
Yes, Senator Short, you've done a number of these. It really is a chance for people to chime in and let you know what they're concerned about, and for you to answer their questions. People have a lot of questions about what happens here in Olympia.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, too, the biggest thing is, are we on the right track? You know, the things that 7th District legislators are working on and all of those things, I think it's a really good core, you know, just a moment for us to, you know, just frankly, you know, are we working on the right things? Are we doing the right things? And, you know, just really appreciate weighing in. We continue to have some of the highest numbers of folks who participate, you know, over the years. It's just a great opportunity for us, and we think for folks back home as well.
Yeah, looking forward to it. And again, that's Thursday night at 6 o'clock. You may be getting a phone call from us as well, so we reach out, and if you do, don't hang up. Stay with us so you get to ask your questions. You wanted to kind of get back to the budget situation. The budgets are being released this week. You know, Representative Abel, I know that you work on the Appropriations Committee. What do you think we're going to see here this week with these budgets? We'll say from the House, obviously you're in the House, or from the House side.
Yeah, so quick step back. So I'm on the Finance Committee.
Oh, I'm
so
sorry.
On the Finance Committee. So
they have two committees in the House that do the budget work. So yeah, my apologies.
No, that's okay. So the Finance Committee, for those who aren't familiar, which would have included me until not 2 months ago, but it's the Tax Writing Committee. So, you know, dial taxes up, dial taxes down. You know, we continue to see, proposals for tax increases. We're dealing with the Senate proposals that have come over to us now, so we are looking at those. But I understand we're going to look at additional tax increases, increased proposals this week, and we're going to continue asking tough questions and trying to do everything we can to stop them or reduce them. But it is difficult, just speaking candidly, you know, with a significant majority that the Democrats have, and they've really nailed their colors to the mast on this. They seem really intent on raising taxes. So, but that's on my agenda this week.
Yeah, B&O tax rate increase, one of those ones. B&O is business occupation tax. Basically, it's the business tax in our state. Many people call it regressive because usually those tax increases get passed on to consumers.
Well, and it's based on gross
right.
receipts, right? So you may have expenses that to the IRS, to anything else, are things that you can deduct from your tax obligation. The state of Washington does not recognize those. These taxes are on gross receipts.
So I just, one of the many taxes that we're all, I mean, what, you know, Senator Short, Republicans, do they have have a seat at the table on this budget writing process in the Senate?
Well, they do up to a certain point, and Senator Gildon, who's our lead, and Senator Torres have been at the table as they look line by line through the budget. But at some point, you know, they aren't involved in those because those come down to the absolute, what are we going to fund? What aren't we? What are our priorities, the Democrat priorities? And so I will say up to this point, they absolutely have been at the table. And I do believe that the majority Democrat, you know, Senator Robinson, who's been working on that, has taken some of their suggestions, and we appreciate that. But I think we're still looking at the universe of something that says we're going to create a budget that needs incredible amounts of tax revenue into the future. You know, they do not look at, you know, and they continue to have bills that really don't spend now, they spend now into the future, which is the reason we're in the spot we're at. So I think at some point, you know, they will not, and I'm sure right now they're not at the table.
Well, do you feel like you have a voice, representatives, on this budget issue, or is it just something that's happening, the Democrats are doing, and, you know, it's not something you're really involved in?
Well, I would say we certainly have a voice. The extent to which it's being listened to is unclear to me at this stage. I mean, you know, one of the rights of the minority is debate and amendment. And, you know, again, in Finance Committee, we're offering amendments all the time to scale back the extent or the reach of these proposed tax increases. One of the amendments we frequently offer is an amendment to make it subject to the vote of the people. That's usually rejected. Another amendment is to have it be a credit against the amount that the state receives, so the taxpayer doesn't see a tax increase. It just means Olympia sees less, and that's uniformly rejected. And so we certainly have a voice. You know, the other side has made clear that, you know, coming for our wallets and our purses is a priority for them, and, you know, we're going to hold them accountable for that. I think it's bad policy and bad politics. So we've got a voice. Not sure how much they're listening, at least at this stage.
Well, just to remind listeners too, the last time we saw this, we were in a recession. This right here is totally overspending. It's overspending has gotten us to the point we are right now.
Well, I think it's interesting that during the governor's inaugural address, he said we need to have a serious conversation about how we got to this point. And it appears he is prepared to engage in that conversation. I know Republicans are certainly willing to. We've been trying to engage in that conversation for some time, but the majority party seems to be less interested in that conversation. In fact, it seems like they want more of the same.
Well, yeah, I mean, beyond more of the same, it's, I mean, are we talking about increases in spending here? I mean, there's the state's facing this budget shortfall of $7 billion, and, you know, Senator Short, you have indicated that they're actually looking to increase spending. Is that right? Am I reading that right?
Oh, you're reading it 100% right. And just to be clear, look, the budget that we proposed as well, you know, does make modest increases in spending when you think of education.
Yeah.
We also, instead of adopting the contract, you know, that Governor Inslee proposed for state workers, we do a little differently. You know, we give them a bonus. We do appreciate state service. We think we can do it in a way that is not burdensome to Washingtonians. But those ideas have not been taken. But absolutely, they're intent on spending more.
We're talking about furloughs, too, for state employees. The Democrats are, that would actually cost, so basically a furlough is a day off, but you don't get paid for it, so it's an unpaid day off. So it really, the employees don't like it, the citizens don't like it, because that's, you know, one less person working on the issues that are, you know, of state government. Another thing I wanted to touch on real quick, you guys are starting to see some of the bills now from the opposite chamber, and what's your perception of some of the Senate bills you're seeing in committee right now, Representatives Engel and Abel?
Well, I would say the Agriculture Committee, for example, is mostly good bills. Those are the ones where Senator Short, the ranking member.
Well, there you go.
I think there was one or maybe two that came out on party line votes, and so those are relatively easy. They're bills that are problem solving oriented bills that are pretty easy to get support for. In the Housing Committee, I would say that the Senate bills are it seems like are maybe, I hate to say this, less bad than the ones that we passed out of the House from that, but certainly some concerning ones. There's a good one. I mean, there's one of the bills that we're going to be voting on, I believe it's today in the Housing Committee, is to allow what they call middle housing, which is like duplexes in outside of cities. So this would be in urban growth areas and Lammerts. So that's positive, and I'm working on some amendments to make it even better. So there are some good things there. I will say that the Senate bill evaluation is easier than the House bills were because a lot of the work has been done by the Senate to flesh out some of the problems, or you see the Republicans made some amendments that we can try to build off and find some common ground. So I've enjoyed this process of working on the bills from the opposite chamber.
Well, I had to laugh a little bit. So my experience has been slightly different on the far more partisan Civil Rights and Judiciary Committee. One of our committee members made a kind of a joking reference to the enemy, and our ranking member said, "Well, that's not the opposite party. The enemy is the Senate." Well, the joke there for Senator Short. But we are looking at, from my perspective, some not very bipartisan, and I think some pretty bad bills coming over from the Senate equivalent of our House Civil Rights and Judiciary Committee. We've got some life bills, some anti-life bills that are concerning for me. And so we continue to wade through those. But it is, I will say, the winnowing process is helpful. You know, the Senate has already reviewed it and said these are the priorities and want to send them over. So at least at this stage, we're dealing with a finite list of bad ideas as opposed to the never-ending list of bad ideas we were dealing with earlier in the session.
Senator Short, the House was up late night, early morning, passing bills. What's your perception of some of the bills that are coming from the House?
Well, there's certainly a number of bad ones. We're seeing a number of those in the Environment Committee. I would agree with Rep. Engel. The ones that have been coming to the Agriculture Committee have actually been really decent. And us, too, they're good bills. They're thoughtful. They solve problems. In the Environment Committee, it's just a doubling down, really, of more of the things that are going to continue to cost us more at the pump. Or fuels may be less available, and so it's continuing that climate fuel intensity issue. You know, we had actually a really good back and forth in our Environment Committee about really what's causing the cost of the pump, and honestly, there were thoughts on both sides. We engaged those who were testifying. You know, committees used to see a lot of that. We see that very little anymore. There's very little time given to bill hearings that are really quite consequential when it comes to what they're regulating or the costs that they're, you know, putting onto Washington families. And so it was actually really, really good. I would say the bill hearing itself wasn't much, but the back and forth with questions and comments were really, really good. And that was on the low carbon fuel standard, a bill to continue to intensify, less fuel, more of the feedstocks from agriculture and things like that, so we're not producing fuel from fossil fuels. And it was very interesting, but there's a number of bills in that committee I'd be okay if we didn't see them. And I think most Washingtonians would be okay as well.
Just a couple minutes left. Any parting thoughts?
Just keep coming with your comments. Keep participating. This is the time in session where a lot of deals are struck behind closed doors, and it is ever incumbent, regardless of which position you hold, please, please stay involved.
And if a fair wind brings you to Olympia, please let us know. We would love to see you. In the last week, we saw Ferry County Commissioner Zach Trudell was able to swing by, and as part of his efforts to advocate for Ferry County, we had a number of additional local PUD leadership come by, including PUD commissioners from Chelan County, Douglas County, Ferry County, and Okanagan as well. So, but if you're in town for any reason, please let us know. We'd love to be able to meet you and sit down and just touch base.
No, and I'll say, too, we hope to hear some of your voices on the telephone town hall later this week. And just know, too, it's not your last opportunity to connect with us. Once we get done with session, we'll be out in the community and hope to see you there as well.
Yeah, I would imagine as you traveling the district, as I done at one time, travel around the 7th District, is you spend the entire interim, by the way, now I'm doing it, the interim is the time that we're not in session, that entire time traveling, because it is one big district. It's very interesting, actually. I really enjoyed my time there, so the district is beautiful. So for that telephone town hall, I'm going to give you a phone number. Write this down. This is the phone number you can call to be involved at the telephone town hall. It's 509-361-1818. 509-361-1818. That is Thursday night at 6 o'clock, and we'll all be there with you. I want to thank you for joining us today for Live from Olympia with State Senator Shelley Short and Representatives Andrew Engel and Hunter A. Bell from the 7th Legislative District on Okanagan Country Radio. I'm Curtis Yellis, and we look forward to talking to you on Thursday and again next week at this same time. Have a great day. We'll be right back.